Either intelligent design is science, or Senator Brownback got it right. No retreat from the war on terror. David Aronovich, The London Times. In recent days, and unsurprisingly, it has become common to hear the mournless rites being read for liberal interventionism. If anyone has opined publicly about Afghanistan in the last week, and plenty did, it was to regret our presence there and to wish us away. If ever an argument was being won by default, this was it, especially since those making the case for quitting were far too exuberant to want to slow up and allow for the possible objections to their reasoning. Canada has already threatened to pull out its troops from Kandahar province in a year's time if other NATO countries don't contribute more. We must assume that if Britain were to begin to talk about a drawdown, then Canada would carry out this threat. British forces would then be exposed in Helmand, and presumably would also withdraw. Let us suppose that an angry and abandoned US follows the lead offered by its allies, and itself pulls out, leaving itself only an air-to-ground interdiction capability. Here are the likely consequences of such a pattern. The Afghan government would collapse, to be replaced by an overt civil war fought between the Taliban and local governors in the various provinces. A million or more Afghan refugees would again flee their country, many of them ending up in the West. Deprived of support from the US, as recommended by our commentators, President Musharraf, or a successor, would effectively withdraw from the border regions, leaving a vast, lawless area from central Afghanistan to northern central Pakistan. Al-Qaeda and other jihadists would operate from these areas as they did before 9/11. This time, these forces, already capable of assassinating a popular democratic politician, would seriously impact upon the stability of Pakistan, which is a nuclear state. Jihadists everywhere, from Indonesia to Palestine, would see this as a huge victory, Democrats and moderates as a catastrophic defeat. There would hardly be a country, from Morocco to Malaysia, that wouldn't feel the impact of a reverse. That's before we calculate the cost to women and girls of no longer being educated or allowed medical treatment. Why Israel Must Kvetch. David Suisa, Jewish Journal. Listen to Prime Minister Ehud Olmert after his country suffered through months of bombings, including the recent brutal murder of Jewish students in Jerusalem. Despite terrorism and despite the pain, we are not relinquishing the monumental task of making another dramatic step that can bring us closer to building the foundations for true peace between Israel and the Palestinians. Those are the words of a taskmaster, not a PR meister. What creates good PR is pessimism, not optimism, being offended, not accommodating. Smart PR is geared to the people who spend nanoseconds thinking about your cause, which is about 99% of the planet. Those people don't look at your body of facts. They look at your body language. When your body language shows no emotion, when you don't even react to being stabbed in the back, you look guilty. In the Middle East, the way to fight the PR battle is not to stay calm, but to show more outrage than your enemy. If defending Israel's image was a priority for Olmert, he would regularly criticize the behavior of his peace partner, Abbas, who continues to preside over the indoctrination of hate in Palestinian society, and who, while pretending to be a peacemaker, praises terrorists and reiterates his refusal to recognize Israel when speaking to the Arab press. But unlike Abbas, Olmert doesn't kvetch about his adversaries. In fact, our formidable Mount Rushmore of stone-faced leaders, Olmert, Peres, Barak, and Livni, will kvetch a lot less about the murder of Jews than the Palestinians will wail about Israeli housing permits in Gush Etzion. That's why they cream us in PR. They're always wailing. Ch. Chapter 4. Informal Argument Evaluation. In a heated argument, we are apt to lose sight of the truth. Publilius Cyrus. Standard form reconstruction enables you to launch a formal evaluation of an argument. This is especially helpful in a written context, such as a paper, an article, or a letter, where you can identify and organize the steps of reasoning. Formal evaluation involves checking for fallacies. We have already learned the 7 most important formal fallacies. In Chapter 2, the 5 syllogistic fallacies. In Chapter 3, the fallacy of affirming the consequent, and the fallacy of denying the antecedent. All of these errors are known as formal fallacies because they destroy the deductive validity of the argument, leaving the author without a logical line of reasoning. Arguments can also be evaluated in an informal manner. You can detect informal fallacies without even reconstructing the argument in standard form. While the formal fallacies commit errors that are objectively demonstrable, the informal fallacies are subjective, meaning there is no way to prove or disprove them. Those who commit informal fallacies are using problematic reasons that undermine the strength of their arguments. Nevertheless, they can always defend themselves based on considerations of context or purpose. So it is up to each critical thinker to decide for him or herself whether or not a given instance is genuinely objectionable or not. Although you cannot prove informal fallacies, identifying possible instances of them, both in your own arguments and in the arguments of others, will enable you to think more clearly about any issue. In this chapter, we will look at the 15 most common and most damaging informal fallacies, which can be divided into 3 categories: relevance, presumption, and ambiguity. Informal fallacies are rare in academic and professional writing because this work is written, revised, and edited with so much care that by the time it's published, any obvious problems have been removed. You are more likely to run into the informal fallacies in blogs and editorials, which are less carefully prepared. But you are most likely to run into them in spoken conversation when people are presenting arguments spontaneously. On such occasions, emotions cloud our judgment and make it difficult to concentrate on good reasons for or against the proposal under consideration. For the purpose of studying the 15 informal fallacies, therefore, let's pretend we're flies on the wall at a meeting of 3 detectives working on the Cassandra Thomas murder case. Who's guilty? The characters: Detective Stephen Piper, Senior Homicide Detective, Gamerton Police Department. Detective Henry Sheldon, private investigator, hired by the father of Dawn Rummy, a teenage girl who claims to have witnessed Mark Deal shoot Cassandra Thomas. Detective Kimberly Binchy, private investigator, hired by Mark Deal, who claims he was in Moscow at the time of the murder. The setting: a sparse, windowless room at police headquarters. 5 fallacies of relevance. The first 5 fallacies are called fallacies of relevance because they advance reasons that should not have any bearing on the issue. Steve.
Hello, Kim and Henry. Thanks for meeting with me today. Perhaps we can make better progress on this case by pooling our information. We have a common goal, after all, to find out the truth.
Henry.
Oh, Steve, everyone knows Mark Deal is guilty. Why don't you just haul him in here and get a confession out of him?
1. Ad populum. The fallacy of claiming that popularity establishes truth. Henry commits the fallacy ad populum when he argues that everyone knows Mark Deal is guilty. Ad populum is often used in advertisements, as in, "Everyone loves Pepsi." It also may be familiar to you from your own childhood, as in, "Please, Mom, everyone's doing it." Popularity is a problematic argument strategy for 2 main reasons. First of all, it's almost always false. If everyone were already on board with the proposal, then there wouldn't be any need to make the argument in the first place. Secondly, it's manipulative. Human beings have a natural instinct to want to fit in, to be part of the crowd. This is why ad populum is sometimes called the bandwagon fallacy. It implies that if you don't agree, you're going to be left off the bandwagon alone in the cold. But this shouldn't be a consideration in serious discussions. History gives countless examples of brave men and women who were willing to contradict popular opinion for the sake of the truth. Consider Galileo, who dared to assert that the Earth is not the center of the universe at a time when nearly everyone, including religious authorities, insisted that it was. Civilization would never progress if we allowed popularity to decide the issues. Steve, hold your horses. I have new information that may change your view. Cassandra Thomas was working for the mafia. Kim, nonsense. Cassandra was arrested 10 years ago for alleged mafia connections, but they never proved their case against her. She's no mobster. 2. Ad ignorantiam. The fallacy of supposing lack of proof proves something. Kim commits the fallacy ad ignorantiam when she insists that Cassandra is no mobster because she was never proven to be one. True, in the legal system, we must treat people as innocent unless proven guilty. But Kim seems to think Cassandra really is innocent because her accusers were not able to find proof of guilt. Lack of proof never proves anything. Just because we have so far failed to find evidence for a claim doesn't mean the claim isn't true. Conversely, just because we have so far failed to find evidence against a claim doesn't mean it isn't false. If you go looking for evidence for or against a claim and fail to find it, the only thing you are entitled to conclude is that the claim is unproven. In ancient times, most people believed the Earth is flat. Although some intellectuals were convinced the Earth is round, there was no way to prove it. This didn't prove they were wrong. On the contrary, we eventually proved they were right. In other cases, human beings may never find proof one way or the other. When we lack proof, we advance theories and limit our conclusions to the available evidence. Steve, regardless of what happened 10 years ago, we now know Cassandra is the leader of a thriving drug ring. Henry, oh, but that's impossible. I interviewed the coroner who performed her autopsy. He said her shop is on the brink of bankruptcy and she could barely pay the rent. 3. Ad verecundium. The fallacy of relying on an inappropriate authority. There are many times when it is appropriate to appeal to authority in an argument. For example, if you were debating whether or not to have a picnic, the weather forecaster's prediction of rain would be highly relevant. However, there are at least 3 instances in which use of authority in an argument is fallacious. In the first instance, an authority in one field might be used in another, unrelated field. Henry makes this mistake when he cites the coroner as an authority on Cassandra's finances. In the second instance, someone might be treated as an authority even though they have no special qualifications at all. For example, people often take medical advice from friends and family members, as in, my cousin says smoking isn't so bad as long as you use filters. In the third instance, tradition might be treated as an authority. While tradition may often give us a clue to tried and true practices, it is often without justification. After all, slavery was a tradition. So when using authority in an argument, critical thinkers need to beware of irrelevant authorities, unqualified authorities, and unjustified traditions. Steve, at any rate, we have established that Cassandra was selling mafia drugs to Dawn when she was shot. Kim, well then we better bury this case fast. Do you think the mafia is going to let us live to reveal the truth? They're probably waiting outside right now. Henry, more likely, they're probably after poor little Dawn. Oh, for God's sake, Steve, get a quick confession out of Mark and put Dawn in witness protection. 4. Red herring, the fallacy of changing the subject. Years ago, when hunters used dogs to chase game through the wilderness, they needed something to help them call the dogs off when the time came. They used a smoked fish called red herring. When the hunters brought out the fish, its strong scent attracted the dogs and made them forget about what they were chasing. People sometimes make a similar move in the midst of an argument. They sense the opponent moving in for the kill, and they don't have a good counter-argument, so they raise a different issue, hoping to be able to distract the opponent from a successful conclusion. Such distraction can also occur by accident if someone who is not fully focused on the issue raises an irrelevant point that sidetracks the argument.